Welcome back to True Crime San Antonio. I am just another San Antonio native, and thank you for tuning in. This week's story is about a family, or rather, a father and son, who were struggling in their cohabitation, and their violent tempers led to murder. But first, San Antonio True Crimes This Week. The San Antonio Police Department is looking for a 30-year-old man in connection with a shooting that left his girlfriend dead and another woman wounded. Police are looking for Evan Aaron Held on charges of murder and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. According to the San Antonio Police Department, Held got into an argument with his girlfriend, 31-year-old Sarah Silva, at around 11:30 p.m. Wednesday, October the 13th, at a home in the 1200 block of El Monte Boulevard near Blanco and Bassey Roads. After an argument between the pair, it's reported that the two women went into another room and locked the door. That's when Held fired shots through the door that struck Sarah, killing her. The other woman, possibly Sarah's mother, as I saw in one report, a 71-year-old woman was also shot, but is expected to be okay. Held fled the scene after the shooting, and anyone with information on his whereabouts is asked to contact the San Antonio Police Homicide Unit. Also, a 28-year-old man is arrested and charged with murder after San Antonio Police said he fatally stabbed his brother while at a birthday party earlier this month. Angel Nathan Gonzalez was taken into custody Saturday evening, October the 9th, on the northeast side. His arrest came after officers were called out around 7 p.m. on Sunday, October the 3rd, to the 1700 block of Leal Street to investigate a stabbing. When police arrived, they found Gonzalez's brother, 30-year-old Isaac Aguilar, suffering from several stab wounds, and he was found between a patio table and an outdoor swing set. Isaac was taken to a hospital, where he succumbed to his injuries. Witnesses told officers that the brothers got into a heated argument at a gathering for Nathan Gonzalez's birthday. The situation escalated when the brothers were pushing each other as family members tried to break them up. That's when Isaac fell back onto a large green slide after having been stabbed. Isaac told his family to call 911, and Gonzalez dropped his knife and fled the location with two friends in a silver or white SUV. All three witnesses positively identified Nathan Gonzalez and his brother Isaac Aguilar, according to the police. A murder warrant was later issued for Gonzalez before his capture. He's currently being held in the Bexar County Jail, and his bond is set at $250,000. And last, 2 weeks ago, I told you about two different stabbings that happened within 10 hours of each other and just a few miles apart, too. The first man was identified as Roy Salinas Jr. the night of, and the second man was identified a few days after the episode dropped as Christopher Olivares. A 40-year-old man who had previously worked for the News 4 San Antonio TV station. As I'd hoped for when I first brought you the story, surveillance from Christopher's home was able to capture the image of a man as he fled the scene in Christopher's 2014 white Lexus, which was recovered 3 days after his murder. Christopher's death has devastated his mother, Mary Coronado, who remembers her son as a happy person. In an interview, she says, "He was outgoing, helpful, joyful, always willing to help others and have friends and family around. That's my son," Mary said. "His killing has torn me up, and I want justice for my son." I will post a link in the show notes to the video that was released. The coward responsible for taking Chris's life will be recognizable to someone watching the video who knows him. Do the right thing, please. Roy Salinas' murder also evades police, but as far as I know, there are no witnesses or video surveillance in his murder. His family implores anyone in the neighborhood who might have seen something to come forward. Roy leaves behind three children and many friends and family who loved him dearly. At first, I thought these two cases might have been linked, but that may not be the case. Hopefully, the next update I give you will be of an arrest. Alright, I think we're good. Here we go, episode 10. Warning: this story depicts accounts of violence and adult themes that may be found disturbing and unsuitable for some. Listener discretion is advised. Officers responded to a disturbance call on San Antonio's northeast side on August 31, 2007. Around 9:30 p.m., an officer was arriving at the house on the cul-de-sac at the 5500 block of Castle Knight Drive when he heard 4 to 6 shots fired inside the house towards the front door of the home. Once backup arrived, officers entered the house when they heard someone inside banging on windows. Upon entering the house, they found 58-year-old Charles Lopinto face down in a pool of his own blood, with multiple gunshot wounds from a 9mm weapon at the front door of the home. After the shooting, 27-year-old David Lopinto, the victim's son, fled out of the back door of the house, jumped the fence, ran through the adjacent backyard, and through the cul-de-sac of Galahad Drive, but was later apprehended less than a mile away at the corner of Raybon and Galahad, but he did not have the gun in his possession. Two women were still inside the home when officers made their way in, but no one else was harmed. David Lopinto was being held in the Bexar County Jail on a $150,000 bond after being charged with murder, attempted murder, and aggravated assault with a deadly weapon after shooting his father and firing the weapon at his stepmother. It wouldn't be until David's trial that we would learn of what truly happened that night. The murder trial of David S. Lopinto wouldn't start until early December 2008, about 15 months after the events of that August night. Prosecutor Kevin O'Connell had summed up the fatal shooting of a father at the hands of his son with a statement not likely to generate much disagreement from any corner of the courtroom. "This is about anger run amok. This is about a dysfunctional family that finally hit its boiling point. This is not the Brady Bunch," O'Connell said. The jury consisted of 7 women and 5 men. It looked like a cut-and-dried case, with an abundant trove of video surveillance cameras and 911 calls capturing the sounds and sights surrounding the August 31st shooting at the family's home. David Lopinto, who had previous drug and burglary convictions, took the stand and described his father's cruelty, including incidents when he was a teenager in which his father choked him and his brothers. In August of 2007, 27-year-old David Lopinto was living with his father Charles, his stepmother Jocelyn, his teenage stepsister, his infant half-sister, and his 3-month pregnant girlfriend Shonda, who was known as Chocolate. David and Chocolate lived in the garage that had been converted into a bedroom. At trial, David, who testified in his own defense, stated that he gave his father $100 a month to help with expenses, and he would buy about $80 to $90 a month worth of groceries. According to David, he did not have a job, but he sold drugs, including cocaine, to make money. And although he made a lot of money selling drugs, Chocolate's use of the drugs decreased his profit. Money became an issue between David and his father, Charles. David's stepmother, Jocelyn, testified that on the day of the murder, they had received a high electric bill. According to Jocelyn, Charles attributed the high bill to 2 security lights David had just installed in the front of the house. As a result, Charles broke the lights. David testified that on that night, Jocelyn approached him and showed him the electricity bill, and she asked him if he had any money to help with the bill, but David told her he didn't have any money at the moment. According to David, Jocelyn was upset with him for not helping with the bill, and when David came home that night around 8 p.m., he noticed that the lights in the front were not working. He had installed the lights to protect Chocolate and the home from being burglarized. When cross-examined by the prosecutor on whether he installed the lights because, as a drug dealer, he would want to see who was approaching the house, David claimed that he didn't need security lights for that, as he always sold his drugs down the street in a laundromat. David testified that when he realized the lights had been broken, he became very angry and went inside the house to confront his father. When he went inside, Chocolate was sleeping in their bedroom, and his father's bedroom door was closed. David then yelled through the door, "Dad, Dad, did you break the light?" According to David, Charles yelled back, "You don't effing pay bills." David started cursing back and turned to leave. David then went into his bedroom and grabbed his baseball bat. He went outside to the front yard and started hitting a plastic chair and a bug zapper. Once David was outside in the front yard, a security camera he had installed began recording events taking place in the front yard. A transcript of the recording was entered into evidence. The narration on the transcript begins by noting crashing sounds. According to the transcript, David then states, "Not effing funny, bitch." The narration on the transcript then notes distant arguing inside the home and states that both David and Charles go outside. David begins cursing and stating things like, "I'll give you something to effing break, bitch." The narration then notes the sound of something hitting metal. Charles then yells, "Get the police." David and Charles start arguing about money, about whether David puts chocolate before his family, about Jocelyn, and about whether Charles gave money to David when he was in prison. Charles repeatedly yells at David, telling him to move out of the home. Toward the end of the transcript, David yells, "I won't leave unless I have my effing shit." Charles replies, "You promised tonight?" And David states, "Give me my shit and I will leave your effing ass forever." Charles then states, "Oh, don't come back. Don't come back. Just go. Leave forever. Please. Please do that." The narration on the transcript then ends with the following. 7 minutes or so of quiet. Then, a San Antonio Police Department squad car drives into the cul-de-sac and parks facing the house with the lights on. The officer exits his vehicle and walks in front of it. Then there's knocking on the window. Then 5 shots are heard. SAPD officer Walter Smith then transmits, "Shots fired, shots fired." According to Jocelyn Lopinto's testimony at trial, she was from the Philippines. She met Charles in 2003 via a website that helps Filipino women find American grooms. The testimony was halting and at times confused, with Jocelyn speaking in Cuevana, an Austronesian language, though a translator was flown in from West Virginia. She says on the night of the murder, Charles had been upset about the security lights and had used a long stick to smash all the lights. After dinner, she, Charles, her teenage daughter, and her baby all went to the master bedroom to watch television. Jocelyn testified that David came to the bedroom door screaming, cussing, and yelling bad words. Charles told Jocelyn that he was going to go tell David that he had broken the lights. When Jocelyn heard yelling, she decided to call 911, but hung up before saying anything. Based on this hang-up, Officer Walter Smith was dispatched to the home. Jocelyn then went outside and saw Charles and David wrestling with the baseball bat. Charles yelled at Jocelyn that David had hit him 3 times with the bat. On the transcript, Charles states, "He hit me 3 times with it. Have some effing respect." Jocelyn tried to grab the bat but was unable to do so. Chocolate, who was standing by the garage, said that she would take the bat away from David and Charles. Jocelyn then said that it would be better if Chocolate and David left the house. She then said Chocolate reacted to what she had said and she was yelling at her. Jocelyn further testified that Chocolate then slapped her, so she pushed Chocolate away. According to Jocelyn, when Charles told her to go call 911, she turned around to go back inside the house, but Chocolate followed her and pushed her against the metal door. Jocelyn ran inside and closed the master bedroom door behind her. Chocolate then began pounding on the door, and Jocelyn used her cell phone to call 911. At that point, Charles came inside the home, took the phone away from Jocelyn, and began talking to the 911 operator. Charles used another cell phone to call his pastor, Brother Earl. According to Jocelyn, Charles told Brother Earl, "Pastor, I've been hit." And according to Jocelyn, Charles meant that he had been hit by the baseball bat. Charles then left the bedroom and closed the door. Jocelyn saw the police car outside the house. She then heard the gunshots. She waited for a few minutes. It was silent, and she didn't know what to do. She was scared, and she wanted to find out what happened. When she finally gathered the courage to open the door, she froze by the doorway and saw the gun David had just used to kill his father pointed at her. He shot several times. Jocelyn described it as fire coming out of it, stating, "I saw him holding the gun and pointing the gun at the hallway." Again, some of the things she said were lost in translation. Jocelyn testified that after the shots were fired, she panicked and began banging on the bedroom window to get the police officer's attention. Later, Jocelyn confirmed that when she peeked out of her bedroom door, she saw David at the end of the hallway. And according to her, she banged on the windows after David tried to shoot her, which would confirm the shots the officer heard. Chocolate, who appeared in tears before the judge and outside of the presence of the jury, was admonished by the district judge, Maria Teresa Herr. She told her that she had to show up to testify on Monday. When she did show up, she testified that on the night of August 31st, 2007, she was asleep in the bedroom she shared with David when she awoke to a lot of yelling. David had opened the garage door, and Chocolate could see David was holding a bat in front of the house. He and Charles were arguing with each other. According to Chocolate, David was holding the bat and hit Charles twice with it. Charles and David then began struggling over the bat. Then Chocolate tried to take the bat away, but Jocelyn pushed her, and she pushed her back, trying to get her to go inside, she says. David and Charles were struggling behind her when something happened and all three of them landed in the bushes. She then testifies that she ran inside the house to see where Jocelyn and the stepdaughter went. When she saw that they went to the master bedroom, she claimed she went back to her bedroom. David came into the bedroom through the garage door. He was very upset, and Chocolate was talking to him, trying to understand what was going on, what happened, and to try and calm down. David then went to the safe and got the gun. She then started talking about other things that could be done besides using a gun. According to Chocolate, David said that he was going to kill his dad if the police came to the house. She testified that she was trying to say whatever she could when she saw on the surveillance camera that the police had arrived. She then told David that the police were there. And then right after that, David just took off running. Chocolate testified that David ran off toward the inside of the house. She tried to catch him but failed. Quote, I stayed behind him until the point where he got by the front door and the first shot came off. I then turned around and ran and got on the kitchen floor. After about 5 or 6 shots, David fled, running out of the back door. David, who testified on his own behalf, said that he killed Charles in defense of himself and of Chocolate. According to David, his father was abusive and physically much bigger than himself, 10 inches taller and more than 100 pounds heavier, to be more clear. He claimed that when he was hitting the chairs outside with a bat, Charles said, I'll kill you. But the transcript does not show that Charles ever threatened to kill David. However, there are portions of the transcript that were indecipherable from the security camera. Charles Lopinto had also been described by his ex-wife as a bully, violent man who captured and drowned cats for no reason other than meanness. Defense lawyer John Economity said that on the day of the shooting, when an argument about unpaid electric bills spun out of control, Charles Lopinto had showed his violent streak again. He's raging like a bull, Economity said, of the father before the son got the gun. David testified that Charles then jumped in front of him. According to David, he hit Charles with the bat to get Charles away from him. He said that he and Charles began struggling with the bat and that Charles said that he didn't want David anymore, which David claimed he perceived as a threat to kill him. Further, David testified that he interpreted Charles' order to Jocelyn to call Brother Earl as a threat. According to David, calling Brother Earl meant that Brother Earl was going to bring over guns. After he, Charles, and Jocelyn landed in the bushes, David went back into his bedroom through the garage door and slammed it down. He was calling his mother on his cell phone when he tried to open the garage door but was unable to do so because the door was jammed. David testified that Chocolate was trying to talk to him but he wasn't listening to her because he had his cell phone earpiece in and was listening to the ringing in his ear. He then went and got his gun out of the safe. Quote, I was just scared, and you know, I wanted to protect my baby's life. I tried to get a hold of my mom, and it was just ringing and ringing. When he looked up, he saw Chocolate had her hair pulled up and her shirt over her belly, and the first thing in his mind was to protect his baby, so he went to the safe. David claimed that in his past experiences with Charles Mad, he was out of control, and he just hurt people. And he was calling Brother Earl. According to David, he knew Charles had a gun and thought Brother Earl was coming with other guns, so he just wanted to get out of there as quickly as possible. David testified that because the garage door was jammed, He ran to the front door from inside the home. As he turned around to see if Chocolate was following, Charles said, "What the F are you doing?" and rammed David into a bookcase. David testified that he thought Charles was going to kill him, so David fired the gun. David then testified that he was running back to his bedroom when he fell, causing another shot to go off toward the hallway. When asked whether he had seen Jocelyn in the hallway, David replied that he had not. On cross-examination, the prosecution asked David why he didn't use the other door to the garage bedroom to flee the house. David claimed the quickest and easiest way out of the house was to use the front door because the other garage door was enclosed with security bars. An exchange between the prosecutor and David Lopinto. Prosecutor: I didn't say it was easy. I'm just saying if you really thought there was somebody out there who was going to kill you, using the other garage door would be the safe way out. David: The safe way is to go out the front door. Prosecutor: Would that be safe if you thought there was somebody out there who wanted to kill you, who was calling Brother Earl, who had a gun? David: I had protection, so why would I be scared now? I had protection now. Prosecutor: Oh, I got you. Okay, so now you've got the gun. You're not worried about anything. David: I just wanted to get out of the house. That's what I was worried about. The jury deliberated from Tuesday into Wednesday morning before arriving at a verdict. Complicating the jurors' deliberations, according to some interviewed afterward, were the Lopinto family's dynamics and David Lopinto's claim that he had shot his father four times from behind as he tried to defend himself and his pregnant girlfriend. But jurors said it was damning that the son had minutes-long waiting period before an earlier baseball bat fight between the pair, during which time police were called, and when David Lopinto returned in the house with the gun, shooting his father as Charles Lopinto went to the door to greet the arriving police officer. David S. Lopinto, at the age of 29, was found guilty of murdering his father and was sentenced to 50 years of imprisonment. He was also found guilty of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon against his stepmother Jocelyn and was sentenced to an additional 15 years. David would file an appeal in 2009, which would be delivered on March 31, 2010. On appeal, he argued first, there was legally and factually insufficient evidence to support his conviction for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Secondly, there was legally and factually insufficient evidence to support the jury's implicit rejection of his claim that he acted in self-defense or defense of others when he killed Charles. And thirdly, there was factually insufficient evidence to sustain the jury's rejection of his claim that he caused Charles' death under the immediate influence of sudden passion. Count 2 of the indictment alleged that David intentionally or knowingly threatened Jocelyn with imminent bodily injury by shooting at her, and that he used or exhibited a deadly weapon, namely a firearm. A person commits aggravated assault if they commit assault and uses or exhibits a deadly weapon during the commission of the assault. A person acts knowingly or with knowledge with respect to result of their conduct when they are aware that their conduct is reasonably certain to cause the result. Here, David claims the evidence is legally and factually insufficient to support his conviction for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon because there's no evidence or factually insufficient evidence to show that he knew Jocelyn was present when he fired the shots down the hallway. Although David's testimony at trial was that the gun accidentally discharged when he fell, on appeal, he now argues that the evidence is insufficient to show that he acted intentionally or knowingly in firing the gun down the hallway. So which is it? David argues that he didn't act intentionally or knowingly because he didn't know Jocelyn was at the end of the hallway. He emphasizes that the hallway was dark and that Jocelyn herself had admitted that the hallway was dark. Jocelyn, however, also testified that when she opened the bedroom door, she saw David standing at the end of the hallway and pointing the gun at her. She also testified that she saw fire coming out of the gun. This evidence is legally sufficient to infer David acted intentionally or knowingly. With respect to factual sufficiency, it was the jury's duty to assess David and Jocelyn's credibility. The appellate court ruled that the evidence is both legally and factually sufficient to support David's conviction of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. I've seen the layout of this house. The hallway is just a few feet from the front door, and the hallway is a short hall. So unless they completely change the layout of this house, I don't believe he didn't shoot with purpose. Just my opinion. David also argues that the evidence is legally and factually sufficient to support the jury's implicit rejection of his claim that he acted in self-defense or defense of others. David points to his own testimony of Charles' abusive behavior toward himself. He argues that Charles had a volcanic temper. He emphasized that Charles was physically much bigger than himself too. He argues that when he left his bedroom with the gun and headed towards the front door, he was attempting to retreat, but was confronted by Charles and attacked. The jury, however, was free to disbelieve David's testimony. Further, David's own girlfriend, Chocolate, testified that David came to their bedroom, saw him take the gun out of the safe, and threatened to kill Charles if the police came. According to Chocolate, she then saw the police had arrived on surveillance cameras. When she told David that the police had arrived, David took off running towards the inside of the house. She then heard shots fired. David himself testified that once he had his gun, he was no longer in fear of Charles. There is legally sufficient evidence to support the jury's rejection of his self-defense and defense of others' claims. And with respect to factual sufficiency, credibility questions like these that turn on an evaluation of credibility and demeanor of the witnesses are up to the jury to decide. The appellate court ruled that the evidence was factually sufficient to support the jury's rejection of David's self-defense and defense of others' claim. In his final issue, David argues that the evidence is legally insufficient to sustain the jury's rejection of his claim that he killed Charles under the immediate influence of sudden passion arising from an adequate cause. During the punishment phase, the jury was charged with the following. If a defendant is convicted of murder, the defendant may raise and prove by the importance of the evidence that he caused the death under the immediate influence of sudden passion arising from an adequate cause. If the defendant raises and proves a sudden passion claim, the offense is punished as a second-degree felony. The jury answered that it didn't find that David caused Charles' death under the immediate influence of sudden passion. Sudden passion means passion directly caused by and arising out of the provocation by the individual killed, or another acting with the person killed, which passion arises at the time of the offense, and is not solely the result of former provocation. Adequate cause means cause that would commonly produce a degree of anger, rage, resentment, or terror in a person of ordinary temper, sufficient to render the mind incapable of cool reflection. David argues that the evidence is factually insufficient because the great weight and importance of the evidence shows that he was trying to retreat from the home when Charles attacked him, pushed him into a bookcase, and struck him in the face. David emphasizes that he thought Charles had a weapon, which is why he fired the gun. According to David, this vicious assault on him by Charles in the darkened alcove was undoubtedly adequate cause, which understandably caused rage and terror in David's mind. David argues that Charles' attack eliminated any opportunity for cool reflection. The jury, however, was free to disbelieve David's testimony. And they did. The jury was also free to believe Chocolate, who testified that David came into the bedroom, threatened to kill Charles if police arrived, and then took off running towards the inside of the house once Chocolate told him the police had arrived. She basically sold him down the river, and I don't know that she wanted to do it, or she felt obligated to do it, but she did. The appellate court ruled that the evidence was factually sufficient to support the jury's rejection of David's sudden passion claim. The appellate court affirmed the judgment of the trial court and upheld the sentencing. I haven't found anything of David trying to resubmit an appeal. If David were to be paroled after half his sentence, which is when he should be eligible, barring any added time, he will be 59, about the same age his dad Charles was when he killed him. I tried to get as much on this case as I could. When I came into it, it was more about the dynamics of what was going on with his family. What led David to just all of a sudden lose it on this particular night? Was he continuously abused by his dad? I couldn't find the evidence in the case to show it, other than the couple things that he said, and the ex-wife's testimony of him being a little violent and mean. The family dynamics in this case aren't lost on me. There are so many families out there right now that are dealing with this exact same thing, even right now. And if it's something that you think you or someone in your family are going through, there are people out there that can help. There are hotlines you can call, there are websites you can go to. And I think that's why I chose this case. I know I've gotten into some domestic cases before, but this one just felt a little different. We don't know what exactly led up to this or what made David go over the edge. But I think it's safe to say that David could have been helped. Him and Chocolate could have left. And if somebody had maybe gotten to him before this night, we might not have this story, which I'd be okay with. Anyway, that's the end of our story. If you're a fan of the show, show your love with a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. This has been True Crime San Antonio, and I am just another San Antonio native hoping to see us through. Take care.